Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
It is 9:36 on WGN. Steve Dale for Dean Richards. And on the telephone with me now is Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. But we're not alone. You're here. 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. You can call. You can text if you have questions for Dr. Silver. I am sure, I'm certain, I am positive, I think, that Dr. Silver wants to hear from you. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. So I want to start off here. We've heard about the bird flu. That's right, the bird flu, H5N1 in dairy herds, and in California specifically, but elsewhere around the world as well. And it's been in the news that there have been individual humans that have gotten this flu. I think the technical term is called horizontal transmission. So if I have a cold, for example, a common cold, and if I'm seeing you on the street and I sneeze in your face, you might get my common cold. Is this happening with the bird flu? Are people spreading it to other people as well?
I think that's the concern, and the worry is, you know, in the absence of a universal vaccine, that it becomes widespread and a major problem. At this point in time, it's unclear. You know, I think the surveillance is spotty. It's kind of state dependent at this time. There's no federal mandate that states are doing testing, although they are. And so what's happened in Missouri is that there was an individual who had no known exposure to animals, and then came in with symptoms and was diagnosed with the flu, with the bird flu, the H5N1. And up until this point, people that had been infected had a direct link to, for instance, were dairy farm workers and or were handling birds and had a direct link to animals. And so animal to human transmission is one thing, but then the virus can mutate and can spread from person to person. And that's when it can become more of a concern.
Well, I'm going to talk about those mutations because when the initial in 2019 into 2020, when the pandemic hit and the novel coronavirus that we had not seen before, because there are other coronaviruses, and you'll explain all this, that affect us all the time, many of which cause what is called the common flu. But the big one, the illness called COVID-19 that happened, that coronavirus is mutating all of the time as well. And what's interesting is the symptoms don't seem as severe in general as they once were, and people, as a result of that, misinformation on the internet as well, are not getting vaccinated. I think I asked you 12 questions there all at once, so I'll let you address them.
So I guess the question was, do these viruses mutate, or what was the... Well, let's take it one by one. What's the first question that I can address for you?
Okay, so talk about how viruses... Whether it be an influenza virus, by the way, or a coronavirus, which is what causes COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, if I can call it that, how they mutate all the time.
Yeah, so essentially what happens is these viruses get in your body and they start replicating themselves. They duplicate over and over and over and over again. And when you have that many replications or duplications, the DNA starts getting jumbled around, and most of the time it's inconsequential jumbling. But every now and then, the next copy has a pattern of jumbles that becomes significant. And then, for instance, just an example, maybe the virus gets better at invading human cell walls. So if it develops a mutation that codes for a protein, right, because every DNA mutation can be associated with an actual protein that does a job inside the virus. And so maybe one of these mutations makes its getting in the cell wall protein that much stronger, and kind of like a bulldozer can just bulldoze through the wall of the cell that much easier. And so then that viral element tends to be stronger than the rest, and it outcompetes the others. It divides itself. And now you've got a bunch of really strong viruses that are stronger than the original virus, and they start becoming the dominant version. And so that's kind of how, over time, through millions and millions or billions of human bodies and through the years, these viruses suddenly become very powerful just with a single mutation.
The novel human coronavirus that was killing many people around the globe, the pandemic that we had, I asked, as I name drop here, Dr. Fauci, I said, is it possible that even a couple of years from now, after a few mutations, that the virus, because the virus can't live on if the host dies. So maybe the virus will become a little more inconsequential medically to us because that virus wants to go on and be spread elsewhere. Does that make, his answer was, well, and I quote, maybe. Is that, do you think, what happened?
Yes. I mean, I think it's clear that that deaths are decreasing. They're still consequential. It's still a very serious pathogen. It's a serious virus. But to my mind, it's nowhere near as virulent or pathogenic or deadly as it was when it first came out. It's had a chance, like you said, to choose, if you will. It doesn't have a brain, but essentially a virus can either become more deadly or become easier to spread. Typically, they don't do both because, as you say, they just kill everybody and then there's nowhere left to go. So it's in the virus's favor to sort of allow itself to spread easily and keep the host alive long enough to pass it on to the next person, and that favors its existence. But I think definitely the coronavirus has become weaker. And part of that is just time and mutations, and part of that is herd immunity and vaccines, because we built up a resistance to the organism. It's had to change because we have vaccines that are powerful to fight against it, forcing it to evolve and become less toxic and more friendly to spread.
Yes, that's interesting stuff. So I have lots of questions here that need answering. You've texted 312-981-7200, and I'll get to as many of your questions as I possibly can. One more question before we take a break here, Doctor. People are not getting vaccinated. And even senior citizens who are the most at risk. I think the number that I saw last was 45%. Are getting vaccines, and the number is way lower for the general public at large, including all age groups. Does this concern you, or are we at the point where we'll do okay between herd immunity and, as you spoke about and explained so well, COVID-19 isn't as virulent, isn't as dangerous as it once was?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, there is some evidence that the vaccines can actually be cardioprotective, meaning that people that have the vaccine, for whatever reason, seem to have a lower likelihood of cardiovascular events as time goes on. That's still, I think, to be fully fleshed out. But that aside, the vaccine is effective not only for you, but for your neighbor. So if you're living next to somebody who's elderly, or you interact with someone at work that has chronic disease, maybe they're living with cancer and undergoing chemotherapy and doing well, or maybe you know, there's somebody in your family with a newborn baby. Those are the people who are still getting very ill and dying from viruses like COVID or the flu, not to leave out the common flu. Mm-hmm. And so the vaccines are very effective, not only at protecting you, but protecting the people around you, because it attenuates your ability to pass that virus on to other people, which is super important from a public health standpoint.
All right. When we come back, I want to get to these questions, but also ask you about what you mean by cardiovascular protection from the COVID vaccine. We'll find out when we come back with Dr. Silver on WGN. Steve Dale here for Mr. Dean Richards. And on the telephone right now, Dr. Jeremy Silver with Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital, where he is the director of emergency medicine. All right, you said something about, and I don't want to let this go because I've not heard this before, that getting a COVID vaccine can protect cardiac health. Doctor, can you explain?
Sure. So we know that people that received the vaccine, the SARS-CoV-2 vaccine, had a lower risk of heart failure and blood clots after infection compared with those that didn't. That was a study of about 20 million people in Europe that came out in around April of this year. But there was another study that I thought was rather interesting from the summer in the literature, the journal Nature Communications, which basically looked at 46 million adults in England, and not looking at whether they were infected with COVID, but just those who had been vaccinated versus those that hadn't. And the vaccination crew had an overall reduction in cardiovascular events. Those are things like stroke or heart attack or blood clots. And so it definitely raises the question of whether there's some benefit to the vaccine beyond just protection from the virus. So long story short, I think on balance, when you look at the risks of vaccines, and there are very rare risks that are associated with all vaccines, the benefits in this case definitely outweigh the risks.
A texter writes, it doesn't feel like fall, so the mindset is not to get vaccines right now. I feel like it's when it gets colder out, people will begin to do this. I think that's a really interesting point, actually, and the result may be a more significant flu season. I don't know. Are there predictions about how much flu we're going to have this year?
Well, I just make the point, you know, I think that's a totally reasonable comment, and I think it's totally intuitive that, you know, when it gets cold, you gather inside, there's more risk of spreading of diseases. But we had a fairly significant bump in COVID activity at the end of the summer in August with a spike in hospitalizations and deaths from COVID-19. So I'm not sure that this virus is going to follow that pattern. But certainly classically with viruses like flu and rhinovirus, which is the common cold, and RSV, it definitely tends to have a seasonality to it. And winter tends to be worse than summer.
Interesting you said RSV, because I have a question here. Do I need to be vaccinated for that? I'm 60 years old. And why are we hearing about RSV in 2024? And 10 years ago, I never even heard of RSV.
Yeah, well, I think those of us in the medical field have known it well, are very familiar with RSV, simply because it's a disease of young children primarily, although it can affect the elderly and in a severe way. But primarily, it's young kids less than a year old who tend to get the virus. They don't have the immunity towards it. And in the wake of COVID, as many viruses kind of became more potent after COVID, RSV as well, and we had a horrible season a year ago with many sick kids. And so one of the things that's come out of that is an RSV vaccine, which I think is terrific. And in terms of you're asking about adults, I think implied by your question, and the CDC recommends anybody 75 and older get the RSV vaccine, and anyone who's older than 60 who has an increased risk of RSV, in other words, you have any kind of chronic disease, diabetes, lung disease, heart disease, kidney disease, those people should consider getting the vaccine as well.
I think you might have misspoke, according to my listeners. I didn't hear you say this. Did you say DNA mutated? I suspect you meant to say RNA.
I mean, I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. Viruses can be RNA or DNA viruses, and so either the RNA or the DNA can mutate. That's correct.
Yeah, pretty technical there, and I'm not sure about DNA mutating or not. I don't know. Doctor, thanks for addressing this, but I have a question about tinnitus. If I said that right, is it tinnitus or tinnitus? I don't know. The side effects, can it be one of those from the COVID-19 vaccine? Do you have any thoughts on how to proceed to protect my hearing health?
Well, tinnitus is a sensation of ringing in the ears, and it can be associated with hearing loss or dizziness. And just to kind of give a broad broad stroke picture of it, it typically is very benign or not, you know, nothing to be hugely concerned about, although for some folks it can last for an extended period of time, and then that's obviously disconcerting. For anyone with tinnitus, they should definitely talk to their doctor because it can be associated with more severe things, problems with the neurologic system in the brain. That being said, I'm not super familiar with tinnitus being a complication of the vaccine. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just not familiar with it. So I'd have to take a pass on that question.
Okay, fair enough. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine at Northwestern Medicine, Coshwaukee Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Dean Richards Show on WGN.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.